I'm just going to shave this part off. And then it looked like I had an undercut on the other side for
it's
a
like
while.
It's like when you're a kid and you can't understand that you've got to wait for your fringe to grow out. Like, I remember being a kid and thinking, I'll just cut my fringe at the root and that will get rid of it. You're like, I'm just going to take my sideburns off at the top.
And it's just not a good look. So I had to, grow that out. Oh my God. And then I didn't touch a facial shaver blade thing for a long time.
Trauma. To today's podcast episode. I know that I don't normally pop into your podcast feed on a Tuesday, but I wanted to get this episode up and out there because it's timely, and that's not something I normally do on the podcast. Like, as you know, I tend to talk about, I guess, personal reflections, and then I also balance that with interviews. But I have been asking the question lately to people in my real life, but also online, about the podcast. Like, something has just felt a bit not quite right for me. And when I asked for feedback recently, I was really lucky to have people reach out and send through really thoughtful feedback. And some of it wasn't like super comfortable. You know, I even had people say, oh, the reason I've stopped listening is because I don't connect with interviews. Or the reason I've stopped listening is because I have turned more towards podcasts that are a little lighter and less about personal growth. And I completely get that because that's how I feel myself. I'm not listening to personal growth podcasts very frequently. I tend to gravitate more towards conversational, topical podcasts, or I guess podcasts that take a deep dive on a topic that I'm interested in. And I'm not really seeking out those interview podcasts either. And sometimes I feel like you just can't see the forest for the trees. I'm like, well, of course that makes sense. Like, of course other people are feeling that way too. And so I've been really grateful for everyone who took time to send through feedback in a really thoughtful way. And I think, like, the worst thing I could do is like receive that feedback, take it personally, and then refuse to pivot. And so I've really taken it on board. I did have a few moments of like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? Because I don't feel like I'm confident enough to share certain things. And like, I had a few like come to Jesus moments. But overall, I am so excited to actually step back a little bit from interviews and really focus more on peeling back the layers, sharing things that are happening for me in my real life. Of course, still respecting the people that are closest to me and also being respectful of my own boundaries. But I also wanted to, I guess, try something new on the podcast, and I want to talk about the things that are relevant, and I want to actually share my opinion a little bit more. And so I'm following my gut on this, and I have to tell you, my gut instinct has also led me to someone else. Just quickly, a word from today's sponsors. Unless, of course, you're one of our Venti members, in that case, there are no ads and your episode is about to keep playing.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
And that someone else is sitting here and she's nodding her beautiful head along, and I'm so glad that she's here in the flesh. Jessie, my love, welcome.
Hi. Thank you so much. Oh, that was quite, I felt like I was like this long lost lover that you're introducing to the potty. But I was nodding because I'm so with you in terms of, I love conversational podcasts. This is what I love listening to, and to be able to connect with you and others in this way is so exciting to me, and I feel like this is a sign of something beautiful.
Thank you so much for agreeing to sit down and have these chats with me. I just feel like those conversational style podcasts really do meet a need for the busy everyday woman, especially the mum who is like feeling, I guess, the weight of the mental load and maybe doesn't have a lot of energy for, or not even just energy, time, right? Like if you don't have time to catch up with a girlfriend, you can just end up feeling like you're so out of the loop. You don't know what's going on. And I think that's where these conversational podcasts really do scratch that itch.
It's so comforting.
Yes.
Yeah. And I like, we need to do that right now and comfort each other. Like, I feel like life's been really heavy. That's a common theme I feel around the world and then in my personal world as well. So to be able to just lighten up a bit and talk about, you know, things that are happening in the world, whether they're fashion or relationships or just things that are in the news cycle that, you know, how do we feel about those things? Do other women feel this way too? And as you said, it can be really hard to, when you're in the thick of life and everything that's going on, to put yourself out there and have those conversations. But to be able to do this and listen back and listen to others and start that conversation, to be able to see like-minded women, what are we thinking?
Yes.
I'm so down for that.
And I think conversational podcasts, in like a similar way to like your reality TV, like your maths and stuff like that, it really does give you pause for food for thought. Like I am someone who will watch a trashy reality TV series, and the thing that I love about it is that you can then turn to your partner or you can text your friend and you can actually dissect something that is going on outside of yourself, but it tells you something about yourself. It's like, oh, that's triggering or whatever it is.
It's people watching on steroids. It's that observational. Yeah, to be able to, I have watched maths this season. I've gotten right into it, and I normally don't. But to be able to sit there and, you know, see certain behaviours where you're like, do I do that? Or I've seen that before. And to be able to see how, you know, it play out in that way, I feel like there's something in that, and that's why they do so well.
Yes, it gives you insight into yourself through watching other people's behaviour.
Absolutely.
Like, would you do that? Would you say that? Yeah, I love it. So I'm excited to have you here. For our listeners, you have been in the social media landscape for 10 years. You're a mum.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously love podcasts.
Yeah. I've been around the traps and I've been out as well. We ran into each other a couple of months ago, and so nice to see such a friendly face, and then you reaching out and, you know, providing me, you know, comfort and assurance that, like, how are you? Where are you? What are you doing? Do you want to come chat? So that sort of thing has been really lovely. And for me, I've just been, in self-preservation.
Which I think is so relatable, Jessie. Like every single woman out there has gone through those moments. And if you haven't, then you're going to go through them. It's just part of the parcel where it's like you actually do go on low battery. You hit that button and you're like, hang on, literally just my top priorities in life. That's all I can manage.
Absolutely. And it's been really like, you know, for me, life goes on and I am still the same Jessie. That I think that's the issue here, is that I still have my thoughts and feelings, and being in this low battery mode, I feel like, you know, with the encouragement of yourself and just and my own self-confidence being like, you're allowed to, you know, come out of that low battery mode. Yes. and show up.
Yes. Yep. I also love that you kind of skimmed over the fact that I like peer pressured you into going for a coffee with me, because we ran into each other and I was actually so vacant that moment because I had something else going on, and Brendan and I, we were coming out of a restaurant and I saw you and I was like, it's like one of those things when you see someone that you follow online, and I was doing the mental gymnastics quickly to be like, have we met in real life? Will she know who I am? Like doing all of that stuff, almost having the impulse to call you by like your Instagram username. You know what I mean? Like you go through like that quick, like short circuit thing. So we met briefly outside of a restaurant. And then I couldn't find you online. And then I did.
Yes.
And the rest is kind of history.
Yeah. A few DMs back and forth and just the... Just, it was so lovely to connect again. And because, I feel like we go way back in terms of being online. And then, just to have those conversations and then, led to now. So I'm excited.
So am I. And when you and I were texting back and forth about things that we were going to chat about, you suggested chatting about where is Kate Middleton.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, of course, that seems like the most obvious place to start. Because even as someone who, like, I am not a royalist, I don't really care about the royal family. In fact, I would probably say that I skew more towards thinking that the royal family, just the whole monarchy side of things, like, I think it's really bizarre that we allow people to just have so much power just because of the family they were born into.
Yeah.
So I'm not someone who would like ever order like royal like a mug. Crockery. Yeah. That's not me. And I haven't read like Prince William's book or anything like that. I haven't even watched the Oprah interview from years ago with Meghan Markle.
Yeah.
Where do you, you're the same.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm like, for me, like I remember growing up with Princess Diana on the TV and thinking of she course. Was beautiful. And I remember the, you know, just the debacle that was her passing and that being in and around the news cycle at that time. And I don't know if that led for me to be sort of dismissive of how they operate. Like I just probably associated that the royals were kind of chaotic. Like,
yeah, and they don't seem to treat women that enter the royal family very well.
Yes.
Like that seems to be the through line. Yes. And like you, I remember when Princess Diana died in the car accident, and that must have been like late 90s.
Mm.
I remember how devastated my mum was. Mm. And I remember thinking, well, like I didn't even know my mum was so invested.
Mm.
But obviously there was that level of care for Lady Di because she was just so likable and warm and all of those things. And she was doing so many great things. And I think also when a woman has been wronged publicly, people tend to have that strong parasocial connection and almost want to protect someone.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it was almost like a primal ingrained feeling for me, like thinking this poor woman and then seeing her kids at the funeral and that sort of thing. I think for me, yeah, it does the whole royal thing, not a royalist, never really like just have always grown up with them on the cover of magazines, that sort of thing, can respect, you know, that they have a place and that people do
the history, yeah.
That sort of thing. Have watched The Odd Wedding.
Yes. I've watched a little bit of wedding coverage, but I definitely wasn't setting an alarm to stay up late or anything.
Was so super like excited for Meghan Markle to join the party.
Yeah.
But
look at you, you're like, I'm not a royalist, but
I just think, oh, I don't know, maybe it's the Disney loving side of me where I'm like, I did have the biggest crush story. On, it was Prince William to begin with.
Did you? Yeah. Oh my gosh, then, this is so revealing.
And then Harry towards, you know, as you grew up, because you realize
he was naughty.
Built different.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I suppose not a royalist, but, yeah, can have poured into.
They've always been on the peripheral,
Yeah. But now when it comes to Kate, who has been in the last couple of years painted as a bit of this, like, you know, snobby
good girl.
Yeah. I'm worried about her. Like, I feel like, you know, the conversation of her, you know, it's really popped up in the last 2 weeks of like, I know, actually, where is she? Is she really, you know, recovering from abdominals?
And Snowman enters the chat.
Abdominal surgery. Or is there something,
something actually wrong?
Yeah. Is she having a bit of a moment and they're relying on this surgery to be like,
yes.
Yeah.
Well, like, again, I feel like you, everything's been on the peripheral. I think you're a little more invested because you had crushes on the royal family. But for me, I just remember maybe whenever this first, like the Photoshop scandal popped up last week, I think it was, I was scrolling TikTok and I saw the photo and I actually thought it was an AI photo. And I am not good at attention to detail. Like, I don't notice anything. I said to you when I was setting up to record, I'm like, my motto is kind of like near enough is good enough, which is not something I'm proud of, but it's my truth, so I'll share it here in a safe space. But I saw that photo and again I didn't notice anything, like about the sleeve, or like I wasn't able to like put my finger on anything that was odd. I just thought it was AI generated because of how happy and smooth and fresh everyone in the photo looked.
Absolutely.
And then I think it was the next day that I was able to actually slow down a little bit and the news articles started popping up about like the Photoshop and then Kate taking responsibility for it. And I'm sure that all of the listeners are across like the general gist, yeah, in terms of, I think earlier this year there was an announcement saying Kate's stepping back from royal duties because she's having abdominal surgery. And then, like, just to basically not expect her to be anywhere. But now no one has seen her. And then this photo goes up on, UK's Mother's Day. But the photo was a bit warped.
Bit off. And then the fake paparazzi shots of her in a car where it actually looks more like Katie Holmes than her. It's like, that's not – why are you doing this?
Yes. And I'm not someone that really leans into conspiracy theories. I tend to be very, like, take people at face value and tend to think, oh, often there's, like, a whole lot of carry-on for not much of a good reason. Like, I don't buy into things very quickly. Like, I don't go down rabbit holes of conspiracy theories. But the more things that pop up, you're like, hang on, maybe.
And I think that it's not so much that I'm worried about the tidbits of why they're doing it. I just want to know if, is she okay? And especially with history being that, you know, women, like, is she being heard? Is she being squashed into a corner? Is she finally, like, putting up a stand and now she's being spoken for in this way?
Yes. And I think that's what everyone is speculating. Like, Kate Middleton is a woman who, you know, mere hours after giving birth was seen. She's always done like the right thing in terms of showing up, showing off, speaking when spoken to, all of her duties, all of that stuff. Whereas it seems like a bit of an odd thing to say, oh, she's having surgery. We're not going to give you the details of the surgery, which I don't think they should. I don't think anyone is entitled to any personal details, but it just all seems a bit odd. And I think that if they wanted to quash these rumors, if this is all just a big misunderstanding and the truth is that she has had surgery and she just wanted a break, and like, she's entitled to a break. But if they wanted to quash those rumors, it would take 10 seconds for her to do a very short video, because she did issue that like written,
where she signed off as C,
which is so like, I'm laughing because I've seen so many people take that statement and use it for funny content.
Yeah, so good.
Like people say, you know, like the average person, I too play around with Photoshop and then like adding horns to themselves and like stuff like that is light and funny.
Yeah.
And I do get a little giggle out of that. But at the same time, it's almost like if they wanted to quell this circus that is going on, they could. And why are they?
Like, it's concerning, I think.
Is it like a bit of a look over here, don't look over there type thing?
Yeah. And I also, there's another part of me that's like, if I give this any more energy, which is very little so far, I'm part of the problem. Like, maybe she's just too much for poor Kate at the moment.
Yes, it's so like that. There's part of me that like, I lean into like this feminist side when I'm, where I'm like, is she okay? And then I'm like, no, like maybe the feminist thing is to be like, just mind my own business.
Yeah.
But I do think it's odd. And that's pretty much all I know about it is like, it's just a bit odd.
Yeah.
It seems like strange behavior.
Yeah. And hopefully time will tell. I hope that she comes out of the woodworks and she's like, guys, I'm fine. Like, I was just wearing trackies for a week.
There's speculation about like maybe William has a mistress and she's found out and they're working through like their strategy, or like there's just so much speculation happening. And yeah, I just tend to think it's odd.
I do think that that's the case. I think it's not the old surgery recovery. I do think that
it's not the Brazilian butt lift that some people are speculating.
Or that she's Banksy, that Banksy That's hasn't funny. Released any artwork in the time she's been gone. My instinct is that she's a modern-day woman stuck in this olden-day world, and she's saying something that she's not supposed to, or like within the circles, and they're keeping her quiet.
Yeah, well, there's that whole part of the, like I said, I didn't watch the interview, but I think you'd have to be, you know, living in a world without internet to not know that part of the Oprah interview where she's talking to Meghan and she says, like, were you silent or were you silenced? And I don't know. It seems odd.
I did hear that Meghan's made a resurgence back.
Yes, she's decided now is the time to come out of the woodwork,
which is telling, I feel.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll just have to keep an eye on things, I guess.
Yeah,
it's funny because I tend to be like, don't really care about the royal family, but this has even piqued my interest.
Yeah, I don't think you have to be a royalist. I think it's just women trying to protect other women, really. And that's my sentiment anyway, is that at the end of the day she's a mum of three, and albeit she's, you know, very privileged, obviously.
She's got some resources.
At the heart of it, I think that if she's struggling, I hope she's got support.
Yeah, because I don't buy for a second that she's photoshopping a photo with her and her kids. You know, I don't share the boys' faces front on anymore, but I would never try and photoshop anything. Like, I might add a filter or adjust the brightness, but I just don't buy that she would be trying to Photoshop the kids' jumpers or stuff like that.
Oh, it's comical. It's comical to think that that would be the case. Like, she's there on her phone with editing apps going, oh, actually, we all need to look happy or anything that. I don't think she would even touch her phone. Yeah. I think she would have people
that touch her phone for her.
Yeah.
Yeah, and surely there has to be like systems, like when a photo is released, it's not like you or I just popping up on stories and sharing a photo. Like, there'd have to be rounds of approval. And yes, while I think like the royal family is outdated and do they even need to be a thing, I don't know, but I still think that they would have systems and people that should be across that.
Yeah
So it's odd.
Yes.
Next up, the next generation of influencers are here, and they are less than 10 years old. Oh. You've got two boys. I've got two boys. We both use social media. We both have thoughts. I have to say that I wasn't really across the fact that so many kids are getting sponsored content deals, or like kids as young as 9 or 10 are doing Get Ready With Me. Like, I think maybe it's because my two are so far removed from that world. Like, the boys would just never think, oh, I'm going to film a Get Ready With Me. Like, that's laughable. But it's a whole thing, isn't it? So there was an article that was up on NBC, and I will link to it in the show notes. But it was basically just talking about how, you know, the thing that differentiates Gen Alpha's online presence from Gen Z, who were the first to be considered digital natives, is that they're not even trying to be influencers. They just so it's so ingrained in their whole experience of life that it's not like they're going, oh, I want to be an influencer. There's so many kids that are younger than 10 that are exposed to it just think that that's how they need to be, I guess, is kind of the angle of the article. And the article goes in to talk about how, you know, there are these twins that are 7 years old, and they're already sharing skincare routines and outfit checks to 4.8 million followers on TikTok.
That's imagine that. Wild.
And a lot of these accounts are parent run. So then it brings up this whole other, I guess, angle of the conversation. Not only are we discussing, you know, how young is too young to be an influencer, but like the parents' motives as well.
Yeah. I think it's nuanced as well. I don't think it would be if one size fits all situation, I think personally, like, I can see the pull of wanting to be in that space at that age. Like, it's no different to us putting on shows for our families and putting on a dance. Or I remember, you know, pretending I was a host on Play School, like in front of a fake camera, like, and this, and now it's just so accessible. So I can imagine it being super enticing.
It's one of those things, isn't it, where I feel like we tend to romanticize a time when technology wasn't as prevalent, but technology has always been evolving. So, you know, like you said, thinking back to our childhood, and as you've just mentioned, I was the same. I was like, everyone come and sit down on the lounge and watch this dance. Everyone watch me. And I wanted to put on a show and be creative in that way. And like, I guess nowadays, one of the ways that kids are expressing their creativity is through these online platforms. And I can understand that, like, it's just normal.
It's just an extension of it, I suppose. It's like, it's that next step. Like, it's would be so natural for them to have access to a camera. Like, they would have a phone and I'm going to film this. I'm in my room. It would be such an innocent, natural progression. So I don't feel like we could be hard on them for wanting to do that. But that next step of actually putting it online, as when we're talking about, you know, 10-year-olds, I feel like there's a place for it. You know, you got to start somewhere. And a lot of the people that I've, you know, we had child stars that we still look up to, and we've watched them have their journey. I think there's exceptions, but this blanket expectation now that if you have a phone and you have a little makeup desk at home, then it's just a given that you can be an influencer. I think that's dangerous.
The thing that scares me is growing up too quick. You know, and I do remember being young and I had dance concerts and I did figure skating and all of that stuff, and I put makeup on and I did stuff like that as well, that I guess you could look at and go, well, why is she wearing red lipstick? Why is that child wearing blue eyeshadow? That's growing up too fast as well. But I almost feel like nowadays it's growing up too fast on steroids. Like, I have a niece who is 6 months younger than the boys, and she will say to me, oh my gosh, have you smelt this perfume from Sephora? And like, my kids don't even know what Sephora is, but she is so ingrained in the world of TikTok. She has a TikTok account. She understands the platform. She had a TikTok account before I had a TikTok account. And like, there's part of me that understands it can be a fun expression, but I do worry about the cost of growing up too fast. And also, you know, comparing it to putting on a show, I think, can be a bit different, because putting on a show for your parents or your nearest and dearest, or even just filming it on the old handheld camcorder, it's not going any further, and the art is in the creation and the expression. And I worry about the focus being in the likes and the feedback loop and being exposed to looking at yourself through other people's eyes. That's what scares me for kids.
I think it's so tricky. It's so tricky because I think some people could be able to handle it, and it depends on, you know, their environment and who's supporting them through this. But yeah, in the wrong hands, I think it's so dangerous. And I for me personally, like, I know my youngest, he's really inclined to perform and share, and he's just a natural creative, and he's vying for a YouTube channel, and we've filmed, but it's, as far as he's concerned, you know, that's the start and the makings of it. But putting it online, that next step for me, you know, I want to make sure that we're in a place where I can support him in every way, whatever that looks like, being online and that sort of thing. I definitely don't want to hinder or stop or squash those dreams of his, because it is a viable, you know, dream to have, to be online and be a creator and to start young and build from there. It can be a really beautiful thing. So I definitely don't want to be the one that squashes that dream, but I think you just have to tread lightly, and that's what we're doing. So
it is hard to know, isn't it? Like, if your kid comes to you and says, I want to be an influencer, and you, or like, I want to be a YouTuber, and you can see that they've got this natural streak where they are that natural entertainer. Is it the same thing as, you know, 20 years ago, the parents going, okay, well, if you want to be an actor, let's get you into drama classes, you know, join the local theater group, all of that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like the modern day version of that, just like, okay, cool, I'll help you set up an account and I'll monitor it for you.
Mm. Yeah, I think so. Because you don't want them to miss the boat as well. Like, you just don't know what can come of it. And if it's just a phase, or it's just something that he just goes, oh, I want to do this because everyone else is doing it, or I see it, I like that online. But if it's still there with time and we just nurture it, I think there's something there. And I think that's the only way you can go about it, really. Like, I just think you've got to tread lightly around it. But if it's a... I've gone off on a tangent.
No, you're so right. You do have to tread lightly. Yeah. And I think it's one of those things that I don't know what the right answer is to a lot of this stuff, because it's very tempting, as I said, to romanticize how things were once. But that's like, you can't always romanticize things and want things to go back to the way they were when we live in this digital age. And I think some people are more like getting on board with it because they're like, this is the future. This is how we're all going to be. Like, we're eventually just going to have our phones, you know, like, what's the word? Like, under the skin of our arm. Embedded. Yes, that's the word, embedded. And then there's other people who are very much like, no, they need to learn other skills first. And I think I tend to sit somewhere in the middle. If I'm honest, I probably tend to romanticize the past a little bit more. And I don't know whether that's the right thing or the wrong thing. And I think it's something that you always have to check in with yourself, and it's going to evolve.
Yeah, it's a ever-changing beast, I think. And I think we don't want to be the one responsible for them being left behind or to miss the boat. And I think that, you know, the common theme of everything in moderation, just and to moderate.
Yes.
Their usage and what's happening in the palm of their hands with their phones. And for, I don't know, for me personally, like, my eldest, he's 16, he got his, I feel like it's a high school thing, like, phone. My sort of rule of thumb is, in high school you get a phone. With my youngest, who's about to turn 9, the want is there, and I can see, like, he's got a smart watch and that sort of thing for safety. But in terms of that accessibility, they, of course, like, watch YouTube on this big screen and everything, but having, I think it changes when it's in the palm of the hand. There's that mindless scrolling and consumption of what's going on. I think if we can limit that, and then in terms of, you know, him wanting to film and put himself out there, I think, yeah, it's just to be able to moderate it for a little bit longer. And at the moment I'm getting away with filming and pretending it's going somewhere, but I feel like that will
the penny will drop at some stage.
Be like, where's my views at?
I can subscribe. It's funny because even right, like, sometimes I'll be filming a video and one of the boys might say, you know, KylieLately.com, and there's part of me that's like, oh, that's like, don't say that, because I guess I have that deep-seated like, oh, I don't want you to connect an individual to a personal brand, and that's probably like my own stuff. But I do think it's something that you always have to like just evolve and check in with yourself and each individual child. As you said, like, about not wanting your kids to get left behind, I think that it's something that parents are focusing on in terms of like not wanting your kids to feel left out. You know, my boys will come home, they're in grade 5, and they'll say, oh, our friends use Discord, which is, I don't even know about Discord. I've never seen it, never clapped eyes on it. I don't know what it is. But my understanding is it's some sort of social media where you can form groups about certain topics. And I understand, as a parent, you never want your kids to be on the outer. But then I also think ultimately your role as a parent is to not be their social manager, to not be their best friend, to not be like a pushover in that way. And like, your role is to keep them safe. And phones and social media do scare me. But then the other thing that scares me is, like, that skewed identity where kids are living for likes or doing these like get ready with me. Like, who do they think is getting ready with them? Like, what is their motivation?
It's tough because I feel like this is their way of communication now. I know that the little ones who are online,
you know, and that's what I mean about me romanticizing it, because I'm like, yeah, send a smoke signal or carry a pigeon. Like, surely that's the right way.
It's not anymore, unfortunately. But yeah, I feel like that's where we're old. Yes. And these youngins, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just used that word. But youngins are, that's how they connect, and they are, you know, they're watching each other. And I kind of like that. Like, I feel like
it's a different language.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're allowed to, I feel like it's so innocent what they're doing. I feel like I wish that it could almost be like a Facebook scenario where you have your own, like it's, you have your own world and it's your friends, and it doesn't allow you to be exposed to so many unfamiliar eyes. I wish that we could get away with that, but it's just the way the world is.
It's a different landscape.
Yeah.
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 And it is. It's definitely my own stuff. I think in some ways that projection of worrying about identity and likes and all of that stuff. But then there is also like that security side of things. And as you said, I think it's one thing for kids to watch YouTube on a big screen where parents can see what they're doing, versus another thing for a 6-year-old to be taking an iPhone into their bedroom.
Yeah. Yeah. No, 100%. Like, I think that this, like, there's this really innocent side of the, you know, children filming content, and
it's a creative outlet.
Yeah. It's another thing for it to just be unmonitored and just, you know, a way for them to just be babysat, really. Like, it could be really dangerous. And I feel like that sort of side of things, just like anything, it ruins it for everyone.
Yes. I think, like, even as you're talking and explaining a little bit more for me, where I think that I land right now is, if the boys came to me and they're 10 years old, they'll be 11 at the end of the year, if they came to me and said, I want to create a video, you know, like maybe it's stock motion, maybe I want to tell a story, like, you know, Blair Witch style or whatever it is. Not that they would use that language, but, you know, they come to me and say, I want to create a movie.
Yes, I have an idea.
Yeah, or a music video, exactly. Yeah. Then I would be like, cool, I see that as a creative expression. Here's CapCut, go nuts. This is how you use it. But I wouldn't be letting them upload it to social media or interacting with people in the way that, like, this article about the next generation of influencers, these are kids younger than 10 who are making bank, like making good money, and it's sponsored content, it's consumerism, they're selling to other kids. And there's part of me that's like, just let kids be kids. Mm. Like, don't be like telling kids that they need an expensive serum. And that's like back to my niece. She will say to me, have you smelt this perfume in Sephora? And, you know, there's part of me that finds that like a little bit exciting, because I'm like, oh, like girl chat, like let's talk about it. But then the other part of me is like, no, yeah, like I don't want you to be exposed to that stuff yet. Like, I want to keep you young longer.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Instagram and those sorts of platforms have something to answer for as well, because I know for a fact that the algorithm is loving on the youngins, and, you know, it's really, it feels like they are part of the push. I know for a fact that I've got little ones in my life that are online, and they're getting hundreds of followers a day and lots of views. And I feel like if Instagram's on board, then we don't really have a say.
Yes, I think that's so interesting. And that's not something that I had considered in terms of, oh, the algorithm is probably feeding the beast of younger users. They have a younger shelf life. They probably will spend more time on the app. Like, it's definitely interesting when you think about it in that way of, like, the responsibility can't just be on the parents. Like, I think, of course, the main responsibility is, but also what are the platforms doing to either keep kids safe? You know, I guess similar to, like, Facebook with Kids Messenger.
Mm-hmm.
Like, did your kids have Messenger for kids? So my two have had that for probably the last year, and even that I was a bit funny about. But Kids Messenger on Facebook, the parents control who you add.
Okay.
And they get like a little code, and it's like a code that they can remember themselves. It's like a collection of little short words. Like, it might be like row, park, pool, up or something, so they can share that with their friends to then add them.
Okay.
But the parent has to approve it. And so I have found Kids Messenger really great for my two because they can shoot a quick message off to Brendan if they want to. They can send a quick message via an iPad to my mum. They have a group chat with someone that they play Dungeons and Dragons with. Like, it's been really accessible for them to have that connection point, but it feels really safe. So I wonder if Instagram and TikTok will come out with some sort of, you know, like parental control or like TikTok for the younger users that keeps them safer from predators. Because that's what worries me is like, you know, like people online watching 10-year-olds get ready with me and then sliding in and pretending to be a brand or sliding in and pretending to be a 10-year-old girl.
Mm.
And I've had these conversations with my boys when it comes to playing the Xbox. I'm like, you are not allowed the chat function on.
Mm.
Like, I'm sorry. Like, you might want that chat function on, but you cannot have it on because there are adults out there who will pretend to be a child.
Yeah.
You know, and giving them that information doesn't feel great, but I think that it's like one of those things that comes back to being the parental responsibility.
Yeah, I feel like if, you know, parental monitored accounts are exactly that, there shouldn't be an issue because, like, that's so problematic if they're saying that it's parental, parent monitored and then these children are exposed.
Yeah, it'll be like in the bio, like, yeah. Cruz, 8-year-old model, account managed by mum, you know.
Meanwhile, Cruz is like in the DMs with the randoms, no. Yeah, no, I think it would be so cool to have like an Instagram kids only space. Yeah, yeah, or a Facebook kids only, but it's just, it would seem impossible to be able to monitor that and create that safe haven. So in the meantime, I think if people can, you know, go their own road and if they are allowing their kids to be online to, yeah, prioritize their safety.
Yes. I think for me, I just don't need any more things to manage. I'm flat out. Like, I am flat out myself. I do not need an account for the kids. So yeah, I think it's very subjective. It's something each family has to decide for themselves. Mm. And yeah, taking all of those things into consideration, and it's probably trial and error too.
Yeah. I think we just got to go with it.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Speaking of going with it, dopamine hit.
Mm.
I love the idea of each episode sharing like something that's just bringing us like a little burst of dopamine that, you know, maybe one or two listeners can carry on with them into the world, because, you know, dopamine's great.
Yeah, we love dopamine. It's dope.
It is. What's your dopamine hit this week?
I'm going to bring to the table, I've been shaving my face.
Like, beards are out, shaving is in.
So a long while ago, I lived in Japan and I used to see the little face, like over there, face shavers were like a little blade. It's like a blade on a stick. It normally comes in like a 3-pack. You throw it out after the use. And I remember delving into it when I lived in Japan. This would be like 15 years ago. And it was a nightmare because I shaved my sideburns off because they were, I was like, I'm just going to shave this part off. And then it looked like I had an undercut on the side for
it's
a
like
while.
It's like when you're a kid and you can't understand that you've got to wait for your fringe to grow out. Like, I remember being a kid and thinking, I'll just cut my fringe at the root and that will get rid of it. You're like, I'm just going to take my sideburns off at the top.
And it's just not a good look. So I had to, grow that out. Oh, and then I didn't touch a facial shaver blade thing for a long time.
Trauma. When you said undercut, I just instantly pictured Magda Savansky's character from Cat and Kim.
Exactly that. That was me in Japan.
Your netball uniform.
So I thought I'd give it a go again because they've made a resurgence. They're a
thing
now.
And it's called dermaplaning.
Dermaplaning. I think you can go and actually get it done professionally, which is probably highly recommended. And it's a whole
cuts
whole
to thing you at home with your Bic razors.
It me, actually me. But yeah, I've included it now into my beauty routine but maybe once a fortnight of a night time, and I've mastered it and game changing in terms of my makeup goes on better. It's not so much for the sideburns, it's for that little bit of peach fuzz on the face. And I know that it can be scary thinking that it's going to grow back coarse and worse off, but that hasn't been the case for me. And if anything, it helps. Like, what I didn't realize it does is actually gets rid of pigmentation if you get it close enough to the skin and without actually cutting yourself. It can really help get rid of those little lumps and bumps as well as the hair, which I love.
So I didn't realize that it was for pigmentation as well. I thought it was for just like the peach fuzz stuff. And I've like used one in the past, but I have been so scared that it will make hair grow back coarser and thicker and spikier. And I guess for me, I was worried that it would end up being something you have to do every day. And again, back to like, I don't need any more things to do each day. I'm flat out just getting through the day. I guess in my mind, I was like, oh, it's an extra step, but you don't do it every day.
No, once a fortnight. And I was scared at first. I'm like, imagine if it, like, you get like a...
You wake up tomorrow with a moustache.
Or even just if you're like, if you're rough to kiss. Or
your partner's got like pash rash. Like over morning, you're both there and like your towels around your waist with like a face full of shaving cream.
That's the rule. You can't shave your face in front of partner. That's a no go zone. I do it in my little. It's normally when I have an everything shower. You know the everything shower, which I vouch for as well.
Yeah,
it's like we're going all in. Yeah, we're going to be washing, in. Yeah.
We're doing the hair. We're doing everything.
Yeah, and then getting into the face, and then the next morning, I can't even tell you, you just feel fresh, like super fresh.
And everything shower does that as well, hey?
Oh.
Like life changing. Like I come out a different person.
Yeah, yeah. And even better if no one interrupts you in that time. I struggle at the moment to get, because it takes about 30 minutes. Not that the shower is running that entire time, but I bring in a stool, I have my oils, get rid of all the hair.
Yeah. Start at the sideburns. Stop at the toes.
Oh, don't mention the toes.
The other day, Brendan and I always shower together. That's our like debrief time because the boys are just, they're talkers and they will talk at us. And so we often find that the time that we get the best debrief at the end of the day is in the shower because they're not going to come in the shower.
Yeah.
And so like I'll be shaving my legs. And the other day, Brendan was like, did you just shave your foot? No. No. You didn't see that quick, like, over the toe knuckles.
Oh, nothing worse. That first initial, like, I'm just going to do it, and then it happens.
And you notice. I'm like, you who notices nothing. No. So funny. Okay, yeah. Do you have a brand that you recommend?
I've used all sorts, to be honest. Okay. Yeah, I've used the MCO Beauty one. There's a three-pack there. And then best place also is the Japanese cheap shops, like Daiso and that. Ah. They have them in, like, 10 packs.
They also have really good dried mango in Daiso.
So good. Yes.
So good. So yes. Good. Yes.
That's my dopamine.
Worth the trip.
Yeah.
My dopamine hit is to shop on Depop and to buy secondhand. I'm not a huge fan of Facebook Marketplace unless you've got the time to like be very patient. I've used it over the past and I think sometimes it can be amazing if you join those like buy, swap, sell groups and there's something in particular that you're on the hunt for. But I made a commitment at the start of the year that I wasn't going to buy any new clothes.
Mm.
Off the back of clearing out my wardrobe and realizing I've got so much stuff that never sees the light of day. I've got multiple like replica items and yet there's like four outfits that are my go-to that I only ever go to. And I was like, I'm just not going to do it. I'm not doing this consumerism thing. I'm not buying more clothes. And then it's like you get to March, like the third month of the year, and I was like, ooh. I do love outfits. I do love outfits. And so Brendan has shopped on Depop for years because he likes vintage kind of American shirts and stuff. And I've resisted it. Like, I just haven't gone. Like, have you used it?
Yeah, I've used Depop.
I mean, clearly not a hot take. Jessie's like, welcome to the modern century, Kylie.
I'm not like an avid user. Like, I don't really. I don't shop online much, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I love my dopamine hits, like, in person.
In real life.
Yeah. Find it super therapeutic. And I'm similar to you. The start of the year was like, if I just don't go, I won't
be
exposed. So that's very much been me this year. But yeah, I can definitely relate in terms of feeling that pull. Like there's sometimes you just can't resist, and it's even just the looking for me.
Yes,
but I find like even just looking on Depop, like and seeing what's out there, and being inspired by fashion gets me going too.
Totally. And so I've like lowered the bar, and I'm like, I'm not buying any new clothes. That's the thing. I will not buy any new clothes this year. I'm on record. But I did buy a raincoat. I feel like a raincoat doesn't count. Like that's like a utility.
Poncho? Like a three, like is it
no, worth? It's like a long, like.
Like a trench type.
Yeah, but like.
Waterproof.
Yeah, like spray jacket material. Oh. And it's so good. You need it for when you have football and stuff with the kids. True, true. But I have loved for my little dopamine hit finding bargains on Depop. Mm. So like these PE Nation shorts that I have on, $10.
Oh my gosh.
And with the cost of living, I'm not spending $90 on a pair of running shorts like I might have a few years ago. So coming across little things like that I'm like, oh, I can feel good about that and I'm not breaking the budget. I've enjoyed that. That's my little dopamine rush.
So good. So good. I love. Yeah, no, I'm going to get back on Depop.
It inspired me. Amazing. Well, I have loved chatting through some of these things with you. And I'm so excited to keep doing this and chat again next week. For our listeners, let me know. Slide into the DMs. Let me know what you thought of this episode. It's only going to get better from here.
Yeah.
I will get the soundproofing back up, she says, as an air, as a plane flies above.
Look, we're just going with it. We thought we'd just record.
Wing it.
Yeah.
But it will, of course. Like, I think... Like anything in life, when you're starting a new creative type product or like project, excuse me, it always gets better the more time you invest in it and stuff. So I know that each week it will probably like we'll fall into our own little rhythm of things.
Ooh, yeah, no, I feel like I've been a mute for about 18 months. So this is
she's taking the tape off her mouth and she's speaking. Well, I appreciate it. I've loved it. And I'm sure our listeners will let us know.
Amazing.
Woohoo! We did it.
Thanks, Kylie.
Before you run off, I just wanted to mention that over on Sunroom, you're going to find exclusive content that will be seen nowhere but Sunroom. And the reason for this is Sunroom is a safe platform. Things can't be screenshotted. They can't be shared or taken out of context, really. Sunroom is the inner circle, and I am over there sharing workouts, reflections, honest, truly raw thoughts and feelings, instant reactions to certain things that are going on in my life, and so much more. Over there, you can also organize your own custom experience. If you've ever wanted to book a mentoring session with yours truly to perhaps take your idea for your own podcast and start creating. Maybe you have a podcast already, but you really want to learn some of the tricks of the trade when it comes to monetizing, streamlining, pitching to guests, or just creating a stronger podcast in general. I'm the first person to say I am not a business strategist, but I certainly am someone who loves the podcasting space. And with over 400 episodes under my belt, I will happily help you to learn from the mistakes I've made in the past and to cut out some of those tricky lessons and to just benefit from that experience. I love talking about podcasting and personal branding. So if you want to book a session with me, you can do that through Sunroom as well. You can also receive personalized voice notes and advice and so much more over there. Link is in the show notes, so come on over, join the inner circle, and the circle is small, so the messages are getting answered quickly, and I am available to you over through the Sunroom app. Link is in the bio. Today's podcast episode was recorded on the land of the Bundjalung Nation. In the spirit of reconciliation, we acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respect to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.